Hi there, friends. This is your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you are listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast.
The Broadway Cast is a weekly podcast that brings the pages of Playbill to life and delivers it directly to theater fans around the world. Every episode will feature Broadway news and exclusive stories from the most notable Broadway personalities. Additionally, the Broadway Cast will give a voice to fans like they've never had before.
On today's episode of Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast, we welcome Shalita Grant, Henry Lewis, and Allison Wright to talk Broadway plays. First, let's check in with Ruthie Fierberg and Felicia Fitzpatrick over at Playbill with our weekly Playbill Pulse.
Well, thanks, Ben. It was great to, you know, see your face for half a second last week, and now you've ditched me.
I can pretend to be Ben.
I'm happy to have you here, Felicia.
The Playbill Pulse.
But all joking aside, we do have to take a moment to remember Broadway lost a legend last week. Barbara Cook passed away at the age of 89. She was a landmark force of a soprano, originated the role of Marion in The Music Man, Amalia in She Loves Me. The list goes on and on. She was a Kennedy Center honoree. She was nominated for a Tony in 2010. So you do that math and think about being nominated for a Tony at that age. So Broadway dimmed its lights last week, and we want to take a moment to remember her as well before we get into the news. Amy Schumer is coming to Broadway. This is landmark.
What?
And she is combining comedic forces on stage with Laura Benanti.
Oof.
Written by Steve Martin. The show is called Meteor Shower. It's going to start November 1st. And not to mention Keegan-Michael Key, also in the cast.
Stacked cast.
When he said that he was coming back to theater, he really meant he was coming back to theater. So I'm all about that. And then The Boss is coming to Broadway. I mean, could there have been a bigger announcement? Bruce Springsteen coming for a limited engagement October 3rd to November 26th. Tickets go on sale August 30th. And check Playbill.com to figure out how, because it's a little more complicated than usual. We've got some opening news. We have casting news for shows that we already know that are coming. Band's Visit added new cast members. Off-Broadway's Torch Song Trilogy found its complete cast. Margaritaville found its cast. Time in the Conways found its cast. Once on This Island found its gods. And to find out who, you have to go to Playbill.com. But all of those casting notices were posted this week. It's kind of crazy.
It's a good time to be on Broadway.
It's a great time to be on Broadway. You want to know what it's also a great time for?
Tell me.
It's a great time to be musicals on television.
Is it, Ruthie?
Yeah, not just on Broadway, because, hello, Benj Pasek and Justin Paul's Christmas Story coming to Fox, starring none other than
Maya Rudolph.
Maya Rudolph, ooh, ladies and gentlemen. She's going to play Ralphie's mom. It's going to air December 17th.
I'm ready. I'm going to, like, start planning my party now.
Also, speaking of musical talents and not just Broadway, Jersey Boys has announced they're coming back to Off-Broadway, New World Stages. We'll call it the Avenue Q model, because I remember when Avenue Q went from the Golden Theater to New World Stages, they were kind of the first show to go from Broadway to Off-Broadway. Mm-hmm. Normally, it happens the other way around. So this is exciting news for Jersey Boys. But especially, I want to key everyone into Facebook Live. For those of you who don't follow Playbill on Facebook, you must start. Go to Facebook.com/Playbill. Social media guru here, Felicia, is the one in charge. But we do Facebook Live events, and we have an event coming up with Bandstand that I am so excited about. It's going to be downtown at Subculture. Laura Osnes, Corey Cott, the entire Donnie Nova band is going to be there. And since you can't be there in person, we want you to tune in to the Facebook live stream August 17th, Thursday, 4 p.m. Mark your calendars. It's going to be awesome.
See you there.
And that is all we have for you, Ben. Maybe next week I'll get to see your face again.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Ooh, shots fired. I never felt so popular.
Thank you so much, ladies. Now let's get on with our show.
Give my regards to Broadway. Remember
a lullaby of Broadway. There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas and Mormonses. So we might reassure that kid and do something to spur that kid. Because I promise you, all of us up here tonight, we were that kid and now we're big.
And ain't that the point of it all? Hello, you beautiful Broadway babies. It's your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron. And of course, you know you are listening to Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast. We're recording in the heart of Times Square, and today we're going a little bit straight. And by that, I mean we're talking about straight plays on Broadway. And to offer up their insight, we have an incredible panel of thespians to chat with us. Let's start with my first guest, seated to my immediate left, looking lovely. She received a Tony nomination and a Theater World Award for Outstanding Debut for her performance in Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. She starred on television as Amelia Johnson on Mercy Street and as Sonia Percy on the hit series NCIS New Orleans. Most recently, however, she can be found flitting about Central Park in the Public Theater Shakespeare in the Park production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Please welcome Shalita Grant.
Thank you for having me.
Everyone likes entrance applause. I'm going to give you some entrance applause. So congratulations on Midsummer. We talked a moment ago. What is the experience of doing that particular show in the park?
It's magic. It's the best show to do in the park. David Rockwell's set design, we have these huge, beautiful trees. And, you know, when we go into the forest, the audience doesn't have to suspend so much of their disbelief. So,
yeah,
it's a great experience.
You've totally been transported to the time and place of it. That's awesome. Seated next to Shalita is the hilarious star and co-writer of the West End and Broadway hit The Play That Goes Wrong, Mr. Henry Lewis.
Hello, how you doing?
Good day to you, sir.
Good day to you.
I got to see your show just a couple weeks back. The show is hilarious. It's so funny. And I heard that you just recently opened up a new block of tickets all the way through December.
We do, yeah. We've just recast the show. We've got an amazing new cast coming in September when we finish. We're all a British company, so we've just come here for a short amount of time, just for 6 months. We didn't even know that the show would run that long, so we're so delighted that it's running on into next year.
It's a bona fide hit. I'm so curious, what is that like, trying to recast these characters that you guys wrote and created? Is it a little out of body?
It's strange at first. We've done it a couple of times in the UK, so we're kind of a little bit more used to the process now. But it's been amazing, and it's been amazing to get to know some sort of US actors through that process, and the people we've got are really fantastic and really funny. And it's all about finding people who can keep the rhythm of the show alive and keep all the precision of it, but at the same time, bring their own personality to it. And I think that there's some amazing people who are going to do that.
Got to be a science to it, that's for sure. I'm glad you're here. Mm-hmm. Rounding us out today is an Emmy-nominated star of The Americans on FX. She recently starred in Lynn Nottage's Pulitzer Prize winner, Sweat. Please welcome Allison Wright.
Hola.
Hola. ¿Cómo está, Allison?
Good, thanks.
So tell me about this. Sweat was marked your Broadway debut, is that correct?
Yeah,
and to make your Broadway debut in such a powerful, moving, critically lauded piece, what was that experience?
It was fantastic. I mean, I was a fan of Lynn's, and I'd met her briefly once before, but what was especially interesting about this was I jumped into a fully formed cast. Oh. Everyone transferred from the off-Broadway run at the Public, except Miriam Shaw, who couldn't do it because of previous commitments. So they opened up that role, and I auditioned hard for it. But it was a real unique experience to get to jump into something that was already in running.
Yeah.
You know, so it was very unique, and I like that. I'd prefer to do that from now on. Yes.
Yeah.
Everyone just does all the work, and then I'll jump in when it's time to go to Broadway.
Just add water, Broadway hit. Before we dive any deeper, my friends, we like to have a little fun at the beginning of our show. And today, given your formidable acting chops, we're going to play a round of cold reading. They all just stared at me with dread and fear inside their hearts. Which is what I was hoping for. In front of each of you, there is a sheet of paper.
Oh, that's what those
I'm
are
going
for.
To ask each of you one at a time to read that monologue. Overacting is not only recommended, but encouraged. So the more dramatic, the better. You might want to even thicken up the accent there. I think more drama is better. So let's start with Shalita, do you want to start us off?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm very excited about this.
Where's my camera? Are you my camera?
Anywhere you want to be.
You're my camera.
So for those of you who may not know, listening, what a cold read is, it's a horrifying necessary evil in the acting world where you show up for an audition with all of your wonderful prepared materials, and then they say, here, take this thing you've never seen before and act the poop out of it. And you have to, and that's what's happening now, and that's why everyone's looking just a little tense. Like, oh, post-traumatic stress. Okay.
Ready?
Shalita, hit it.
If I were a rich man, daddle deedle daddle. Daddle deedle daddle deedle dum.
all day long, I'd bitty bitty bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Daddle deedle daddle daddle deedle daddle deedle dum. If I were a bitty bitty rich daddle deedle daddle deedle man.
Excellent, Shalita Grant. Fantastic. That is my absolute favorite monologue from Death of a Salesman. That was very, very well done. All right. You might be noticing a theme as we move forward, my friends. Henry, are you ready? Henry, well, with a cold read.
As ready as I'll ever be. Okay.
All right.
Oh, my God. Okay. So if you care to find me, look to the western sky. As someone told me lately, everyone deserves the chance to fly. And if I'm flying solo, at least I'm flying free. To those who'd ground me, take a message back from me. Tell them how I am. Defying gravity. I'm flying high. Defying gravity. And soon I'll match them in my renown. And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me down.
Perfect.
Well, I don't know if it was perfect.
That was bone-chilling. It was like I was hearing it for the first time.
Bone-chilling, that's what they're going for. The centerpiece of
Well, they're trying to cast that movie, so I'm going to start a GoFundMe campaign. We're going to get you on as Elphaba in the film of Wicked.
Thank you. Yes.
I think it'll be great. All right, Allison?
All right, for all the kids at home that are now considering giving up acting and that they're never going to go to an audition, that they'll be terrified, a cold read usually...
Yes, please.
You do get to read it through at least once.
Yeah.
Before you have to start doing it. So this is not really a cold read, so don't be too afraid.
Okay, good. That's
Here we go.
I like that.
Okay.
The All actor right. approaches text.
All right. And I'm telling you, I'm not going. You're the best man that I'll ever know. There's no way I could ever, ever go. No, 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 no way. No, no, no way I'm living without you. Oh, I'm not living without you. I'm not living without you. I don't want to be free. I'm staying. I'm staying. And you, you're going to love me. And you're going to love it.
Well, I want you all to know that that went far better than I ever could have dreamed of. My gay little heart is just alive and dancing inside of my chest.
Deedle, deedle,
dum. Now,
there's
all right.
more daedles in that than I remember.
Then you remember, right? But she handled it with such panache.
Thank you.
One last thing, and then we're going to be serious actor talky people.
Another cold read?
Yes, but this one is a little bit different and very, very special. And I thought we would take this opportunity and do a dramatic spoken word of the Schuyler sisters. From Hamilton. Okay. So, Shalita, you'll play Angelica.
Uh-huh.
Allison, you're Eliza. And Henry, it comes no surprise. You'll be playing Peggy.
Of course. It's very on center.
And I'll be playing the company / all men.
Okay. Daddy said to be home by sundown.
Daddy doesn't need to know.
Daddy said not to go downtown.
Like I said, you're free to go. But look around. Look around. The revolution's happening in New York.
New York.
New York.
Angelica, work.
It's bad enough Dad wants to go to war.
People shouting in the square.
It's bad enough there'll be violence on our shore.
New ideas in the air. Oh, look.
Angelica, remind me what we're looking for.
She's looking for me.
Eliza, I'm looking for a mind at work.
Work. Work.
I'm looking for a mind at work.
Work, work.
I'm looking for a mind at work.
Work. That's the Schuyler sisters. This is so exciting. I'm very excited for your new careers as giant musical theater stars in Hamilton and Wicked and most especially Dreamgirls and Fiddler on the Roof. Okay, let's enough of the tomfoolery. Let's jump in and learn a little bit about you guys. All right, let's start at the very beginning. I'd like to ask you guys, what was the moment when you were a kid, most likely, the play or the film that you saw that first made you think, ah, I want to do that?
Evita.
Evita?
Uh-huh.
Really? Where did you see Evita?
At the Baltimore, they had a theater, and our version of the playbill, I went to Baltimore School for the Arts, and I got picked to be a reviewer, and I have a thing about critics because I went and saw Evita and I wrote a pan because I was so jealous that I couldn't be on this stage.
Oh my gosh, it makes you wonder how many times Ben Brantley did
that.
So
he was like, so jealous.
I just wish I was Idina Menzel.
Yes,
this stinks.
But yeah, it was magic. Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. I was just like, you know, 16, like I could do it so much better.
Yeah.
I could do it so much better.
Henry, what do you remember?
A big thing for me was kind of lots of British comedy stuff. I mean, in terms of stuff not on stage, but Fawlty Towers was sort of huge for me. And that was something that my parents very much in their generation enjoyed, originally came out in the 70s. And so when they sort of shared that with me and I got to watch that with them, I think that was really, really special. And that and kind of Only Fools and Horses and Blackadder and the sort of, I don't know, being able to make people laugh, I thought was a really special thing.
Yeah, that can be a drug, can it?
Yeah,
people
totally.
Laugh. Allison, what do you remember?
I think that I was probably... My mom always took me to the theater as a kid. She loved musicals and loved the ballet. So I was seeing stuff earlier than I can even comprehend, just in pantomime and stuff, you know? And I started performing at a pretty young age myself in pantomimes. But the thing that sticks out for me is the beginning of I Want to Do That would be the movie musicals of Annie, especially, you know, Anne Reinking and Carol Burnett. It was probably that. And, of course, A Chorus Line. Those are my big... things of being like, I want to do that.
I too remember watching that Annie movie and seeing Anne Reinking, not even knowing who she was, but her in that yellow dress and moving around and kicking and singing. And I didn't know what I was feeling, but I felt it strongly.
Yeah. Same.
Once you we share that. So from those moments when you said, "Hey, I can do that. I want to do that." What were your first and earliest stage experiences? When did you get up and actually start performing? Community theater, you say panto.
My mom put me in a dancing school probably at like 3. I probably started before 4. And
wow.
I think I had my first professional job was when it must have been a regional touring company came with pantomime and they just sort of hired the kids for that.
Allison, can I ask you, just for many of our listeners may not know what pantomime means, and we kind of think of it as Marcel Marceau, which is not the case, right?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's fairy tales, right? It's fairy tales.
Easily, yeah.
Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, Mother Goose, which was the first one I did, Snow White, which was the second one I did. those sort of stories, all played by adults, full of musical numbers, also full of current pop songs.
Oh.
Often the main roles are played by television stars or pop stars. This still happens today.
Sounds like
only
a lot of Broadway right now.
Only happens over Christmas and New Year. And all the family goes. It's fun family tradition. And there's a lot of interaction between the audience and, he's behind you, or you boo at the bad guy. And also, it's all cross, how would you say it? It's always women that play the, like, Prince Charming.
Cross-dressing.
Peter Pan would always be a girl.
Oh, yeah.
The roles are always reversed.
You'd also have a pantomime dame, which is always a...
Always a man.
A man.
Okay.
A woman, so...
Yeah.
In a giant Victorian dress, I hope.
Yeah.
It's a Victorian tradition, I think, right?
Yeah, it goes way back. But it's got kind of... But I don't know, it's sort of got modern edges to it now, but it's a very particular thing. And people throw sweets at the audience.
Yeah.
It's a very unique style.
It's like,
I'm not going to lie to you, it sounds marvelous.
Maybe like a bit Rocky Horror, but for kids, like a bit more innocent.
Every time I've ever seen it explained to people in America,
like,
what it is, I've always seen this look of sheer confusion, because it is such, such a sort of ragbag of it's a lot of things.
I like that the train just keeps coming. You're like, there's sweets, there's a man in drag running the show. He's behind me.
There is. There's always someone behind someone, but that in itself is a weird thing to have as a stock part of anything.
Right.
So there's always that.
Tell me, so was pantomime part of your early experience, Henry, or?
Oh, certainly.
Remember?
But in the UK, it kind of is for everyone, I think, because a lot of people who don't see theatre regularly would see a pantomime once a year. That would be kind of the one thing that you do. And so, no, totally, absolutely. And quite often pantomimes as well, you get magic as well. So that was a big thing for me. I did quite a lot of magic when I was younger, not so much now. But and that was kind of a big part of a thing that I enjoyed doing. And I first did shows when I was, I don't know, like I joined a youth theatre. I was maybe 9 or 10. I did a show called There's a Ghost in the Basement. And
who did you play?
I love that show.
Do you know that show? Who did you play in The Ghost in the Basement, Henry?
I played, it was It was this show, and it was, I don't know, it was probably about 10 pages, the full script. And we were young, so we did the abridged script that had been cut to about 3 pages, a very, very short play. Uh-huh. I played Lord Freckleby, I seem to remember, who I think was one of the ghosts, but I can't quite remember.
Please tell me that Lord Freckleby is still on your resume to this day.
Sadly not.
That's
got bumped
got
off.
Bumped
but
off.
Yeah. As things progressed. What about you, Shalita?
You
saw Evita and said, all right.
Well, no, before, when I was raised in Virginia, I was born in Baltimore, raised in Virginia, finished high school in Baltimore. When I was in Virginia, my mom got bit by the acting bug and joined this community theater in Petersburg called Playmakers. And I was 7 or 8, and we would go around to the army bases or auditoriums, and I would do dramatic readings of poems at 8, and my first salary was $8, and I spent that at
the
mall.
Some people don't make that much even here in New York City today.
Yeah. It was magic.
Uh-huh.
But when I got to high school in Petersburg, there was a governor's school that I just opened, and I was like, well, I know all the people at Petersburg High, so why don't I go to this governor's school? So I auditioned.
And got it.
Yeah, I slapped myself. My mom, the only place she knew was Raisin in the Sun.
Okay.
And the requirement was to do a monologue, and her grand idea was to do a scene. So I played both Mama and Benita. And there's a scene where Benita says, I don't believe in God. And Mama says, she slaps her, in my house, there's always God. Slap myself. And I got in.
Was it a kind of thing where you were like looking one way to be one character, then change your physicality to the other?
Just the worst version of that story is exactly what I did, actually.
What do they call that? A dramatic interp, right?
Yeah. I slapped myself, and then I was Benita, and I received the slap. And then I came up.
The range of it all.
But you got in. You got in.
Totally got in.
Of course you did. That's amazing. That's some Jekyll and Hyde goodness right there. I noticed as I was reading up on all three of you that you have all received some really substantial acting training. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Maybe we'll start with you, Shalita. I know that you went to the Juilliard School.
Yes.
And how did you go about arriving at Juilliard?
It was an accident. So I was at the school in Virginia and wasn't a good teenager. So I got shipped to Baltimore to live with my dad's family. And that's how I ended up in Baltimore. And when I saw the city, I was like, nope, I got to go to art school. Can't go to regular school. They're going to kill me.
Uh-huh.
So we showed up at Baltimore School for the Arts and we're like, please let me audition. So they did. And I got in and I was there for 2 years, got there in the middle of 10th grade. And when I got to my senior year, my acting teacher was like, have you considered college? Have you considered what you want to do? And I was like, no, not really, but maybe I want to do this. I don't know. And he was like, well, you should audition at Juilliard. And I was like, what's that? And he was like, it's a good school. Yeah. You should audition. So I auditioned, and it was my first college audition, and I looked at it as practice for the schools that I wanted to go to, which were University of Minnesota, the Guthrie program, and the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. So I did my audition, and I got through these callbacks, and we did actually at the end of the callback at like 11:30 at night, we did a cold read, and I had to read Virginia Woolf cold, like what we just did.
Mm-hmm.
Cold.
Yeah.
And I got into the school, and I just approached the second round of callbacks like, and for my next piece, just trying out my audition material. And I got in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like I got there and we did and it was like me and someone else that got into the school, and it was 18 of us. They only accept 18 people. It was like during orientation when they were doing the history of Juilliard that we were like, holy smokes.
Oh, this is where we landed.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was probably, once again, like a boon to you to have kind of no
ignorance
ideas.
Ignorance is bliss.
And be a little bit fearless about it. I think so many people would probably be like, Juilliard, oh no.
Yeah.
I wet myself.
Yeah.
Allison, Lee Strasberg Institute.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I had been doing musical theatre in England before that, and we had got to the, you know, the acting part of the course, I suppose you'd say, and we started to learn about Stanislavski, and then that led me to do a little bit more work on my own, and then I found out about Lee Strasberg, and then I found out about the method, and then I thought, what is this? This looks like something I just inherently felt like I could do well at. And so I looked it up somehow without the internet. I don't know how I found out that there's, how do we do anything before the internet, right? I found out that there was a school in New York and there was one in LA. And New York was closer and I considered myself much more of a New York person. This is at like 19.
Uh-huh.
And so I was here on vacation and I thought I'd just pop in and just see what it was all about. And they gave me an audition on the spot. And then so I went back after Christmas vacation and had to try and figure out how to tell my mom and dad, you know, I'd got a place and could I possibly go in like 9 months to start to study there? Yeah, a bit cheeky, but that's how it worked out.
I think for both of you, that's hysterical that these are places that people would have been so very like, I got teeth chattery about. What's your experience, Henry? Lambda.
Yeah, I went to Lambda.
Tell the people what Lambda stands for.
Lambda stands for the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing school. I had a brilliant time there. I did a foundation course there and then a 3-year acting course after that. I was there from when I was 18. And it's amazing. I think there's so much variety at that school. And you can really kind of, you can really find what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And I think, you know, both of those are useful.
Yeah. Do you teach there now on occasions? Is this true?
Occasionally. I haven't done for about a little while, but yes.
You've been busy writing the big Broadway hits and all that. So, but that's a fun full circle kind of moment, I bet.
Yeah, it's really fun. And it's a really sort of family place.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, all of you having had these experiences, how important is acting training for a serious actor? How important is school? I know some people say, I've got a dream and a tube of chapstick and I'm heading to Los Angeles and I'm doing the flickers.
And it works for a lot of people.
And some people it does. You know, you have just right the cup size and the winky winky maybe. But how important is training as an actor?
I think it's vital.
Yeah.
I still take class when I can.
Oh, great.
I go to Seth Barrett and Lee Brock at the Barrow Group here in the city. I wish I'd had a fuller, more formal education rather than musical theatre and then the method and then what I've done since. There's something to be said for the conservatory education just for the breadth of knowledge and experience you get of writers and styles, and it's hard to figure out that stuff on your own. Mm-hmm. So I think it's imperative, but as you say, plenty of people have careers that can't act.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you find that's a little bit different? It's a little bit different maybe on stage than on film. I think on stage, maybe you really have to have your acting chops in order.
You can't get away with it as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that...
Shalita?
I have so many thoughts. I think in my experience, having gone to Juilliard, like having that brand, it gave me a lot of cachet and validation as a human, unfortunately, that I don't think I would have had if I didn't. So especially like on a set where there's so much money and, you know, so much power, like in the room, and everybody is like, this is my power. Being able to make a choice, even artistically, can sometimes be hard. And so when they, like, I had an experience once where a director was like, oh, she's a real actress. She has her equity card. You know, she's a Tony nominee, you know? And so there was like all of this space given for me to like do my thing on like a not really even that serious show. And it was like set in a way that was like, it was funny, but there was also something around that, but
a little bit of snark, maybe.
Yeah,
a crust of snark.
A little bit of snark, and then other people took it personally and started showing their resume. So there is that you have to deal with in the interpersonal relations, which I don't think that when we talk about the business, we don't really talk about the business side of the business, which is about more than just money. It's about like producers and what those producer levels are and what a number one means and, you know, all of these, the politics of the business. I think having an education as a woman, as a young Black woman, it almost always gives me a lot more validation than if I hadn't. And then on the artistic side, going to Juilliard, there is a bunch of stuff that I don't use, like whole semester's worth of stuff that, like masks. I don't use that in my
it's
career.
It's like it's the algebra of acting study.
Yeah, but I can say that I have an arsenal of, you know, tools that, especially for a show that I do, a procedural, where it can be like the same thing every week. The thing that keeps me interested and keeps the audience interested is that I'll just use a tool and just like, just that little bit of a difference. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's exciting, you know? So
yeah, the bag of tricks is always helpful.
And you may well have a mask question right in the at the end of this interview.
You know what
so,
I'm saying?
You know,
that's gonna be the, you know.
And you'll be able to handle it. That's exactly what's going to happen now. The mask questions are going to come out. But let's jump into in the Playbill realm. Obviously, you've all done very well for yourselves, and you are Broadway stars. What was the experience of opening up a Playbill in New York City when you arrived on the Great White Way?
I had done like community theater, and they didn't have playbills; they just had the program. So, so to be in it, but everybody calls it the Playbill. But I'm like, y'all, where is it say Playbill
on this,
on this program? Nowhere. It's a program.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that is exciting to be in an actual Playbill.
Yeah.
And I had the fortune of getting a feature in the Playbill. So like being texted by friends who were seeing different shows and were like, I saw you in the Playbill, girl. And I'm like, that's
what was your feature in the Playbill?
It was for Vanya Sonia. It was
they did an article on
it. So it was in all the Playbills. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Henry?
Yeah, it was really cool. And I think that the show that we're doing here, Play That Goes Wrong, started in a very, very small way. We did it in a pub theatre, 60 seats, in Islington, North London. And it was one act long, an hour long, and it grew from there. So we did a second run there. We did a run at the Edinburgh Festival, Trafalgar Studios, which is like a sort of slightly larger 100-seat West End studio space. Then we wrote a second act for it. Then it went on UK tour, and then it went into the West End, and now it's come here. To kind of be here and to see our name in the Playbill and to do the show on Broadway has been kind of the amazing end of the journey of that show, because it started in the smallest possible way. And so to be finishing it in a sort of, you know, 1,000-seat Broadway theatre has been an incredible thing. And it's the same cast from the beginning to the end. So it's been a really magical journey.
Yeah, it's a wonderful fairy tale. Alison Wright, what was that experience for you? Was that
the
neat?
First time for me was when I did Rafter Rafter at the New Group off Broadway. And it was amazing. It was massive. I mean, most of the time leading up to it was just nauseating, trying to pad out what I didn't have to write about and what I didn't have to put in the Playbill versus everyone else that was in the play. You know, it's a pretty stressful thing having to write your little synopsis all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I find it very stressful, especially when you've got nothing to put in there. But I was thrilled to have it nonetheless.
That's when you go back to the pantos. Yeah, you're like,
I know,
Christmas
right?
Miracle.
Mr. Fraggle, yeah. He would have been in Fraggle. There for mine, yeah. Full of that. But I collect all the playbills of everything that I go to see. Yeah, and I have them all. I probably have like, I don't know, 200. And it's from everything that I've seen since I moved to New York, bar a few that I've lost here and there. Like, I can't believe I lost my One for the Life, which was one of the best musicals that ever was. Wow. I finally met Lilias White recently.
Oh,
she came backstage at Sweat and I cried and lost my mind, and I wish I'd had it for her to sign, you know.
Yeah.
But that one, somebody pinched for me. I don't know where that is. But I love to keep them, because then the more that you work, you come across actors, and then you'll remember, wait a minute, were they? And you go back into my files.
Uh-huh.
And like, holy, that was them. And you couldn't even believe it, that you see the same actress over and over and over again. But had I not had my trusty Playbill, I wouldn't have, like, remembered that necessarily, or been able to remember how much I enjoyed their performance. So they really are cool things to have and to keep, I think.
Are you in a show? I know you are. Do you want to add some Broadway flair to your school or community theater production? Well, Playbuilder lets you build your very own Broadway quality Playbill program.
Each playbill is fully customizable for your production. Dates, song title, cast names, production credits, artwork, and even advertising. It's a great way to promote your show, raise money for your organization, and create a professional, printable program. Save valuable time with Playbuilder Express. Select from thousands of pre-populated programs in our database and simply begin to customize your production's playbill. Visit playbuilder.com to learn how you can create your own playbill today.
So let's dig into a little bit more of your thoughts on acting and working on contemporary pieces, Sweat, for example, or doing Shakespeare in the Park. How do you approach a classic piece versus a contemporary piece? And what are the differences therein?
Well, coming from a procedural, a network procedural, to doing Shakespeare, I hadn't done Shakespeare since 2011, and I hadn't done a play since 2014. And I remembered from school that a teacher said the best rehearsal experience that you can have is having made no concrete decisions before you get in the room and really using your time to try, you know, different things. Now, that isn't to say, like, you can look at a moment and it could be played 11 different ways, but realistically, there's like maybe 2 to 3 choices. Mm-hmm. So really trying those 2 to 3 choices and seeing, you know, and failing and being like, oh, okay, well, this is the one, you know, for this production. So that was my experience doing Midsummer was very enriching. It was great. And going back and realizing like, oh, I can do this. I haven't done this in a while. Let me try this. It was just going back and dusting off the tools. But I've said this before, the difference between, you know, doing a show, a modern show, and Shakespeare, the work in Shakespeare is twofold. It's about clarity and entertainment because a lot of the words and the language is not something that we are used to hearing. So you do have two jobs, which is like making the language clear and also, you know, playing the moments and being entertaining. And I love it. I think it's great.
It's a little bit dangerous to dance that line. Allison, I go to you. Returning to the stage after being in a hit television show, is that something that when you're working in television that you dream of getting back on stage?
Well, I did, just because that's where I began. I was, but I was concerned that I had maybe become too small. I hadn't done a musical probably in about 5 years, and probably the same for a straight play. I was probably away from the theater for about 5 years, and I was worried that I had become, and I spoke to everybody in the cast. I spoke to Lynn Nottage, Kate Worski, the director, the sound guy, everyone. I was like, you need to tell me if you can't hear me or if I'm being too small, because I was, in my head, I was really worried. Apparently that hadn't happened. It's a different medium, the television or film versus the stage. So I was really concerned about that, but it turns out that I didn't need to be, unless anybody else saw it and would disagree with that. But it was a worry that I had, yeah. And I think it's smart to keep on top of those worries and concerns and figure it out.
What is the most enjoyable thing as an actor in being on stage and on being on set?
Being on stage, for me, would be getting to have the whole journey of the character from beginning to end in the right order. And so whatever that journey is that night, it's that night's journey. And for me, it did vary every performance, but I got to have a through line. And so as an actor, it's a little bit more, I don't want to say indulgent, but you get to enjoy it a bit more because you're really having the whole experience of the story that you're telling of that character. TV and film, it's totally out of your control. You can just do your best in that shot. Hope they don't use the terrible take. You know, try to concentrate when there's 50 million people in the room and you're literally, someone's right in your eye line, like, with the boom, and you're like, really? I have to.
I'm acting here.
I'm acting, for God's sake. Get out of the bloody
Show
way.
Show some respect. So I think you hear actors so very often talk about, where do you begin with a piece? And generally the answer is by beginning with the text. And you all have had the opportunity to work with the writers or be the writers of the shows that you are working on. And what is the dynamic? And is it frightening, I wonder, when you're working in a show with the writer right there? How does that affect your performance or being both at the same time, Henry? How does that feel? Does that make you feel like a two-headed monster.
Oh, it's a bit, well, I don't know. Oh, completely different for me. No, I think it could be sort of, it's great. I mean, I think it's really fun. And because of the way we work as a group, you know, it's three of us write the shows, but everybody very much has, you know, an input on the show and making it. And we workshop everything that we do. So we'll come in with a very much a first draft, but then we'll improvise the scenes. We'll look at different ways of doing the dialogue. We'll, you know, play with objectives and different people and look at the characters' journeys, and the actors all, you know, get into the characters and have such a strong grasp on them. And so there's tons of feedback there and lots of table work that we do on it.
I did something with Wally Shawn once. That was intimidating, having him in the room because he's so smart.
Yeah,
you know?
Explain.
I did Marie and Bruce off Broadway with Marissa Tomei and Frank Whaley, and Wally was there every day, and he was writing new lines and changing things around. And I think, if I remember right, Marie and Bruce was at the Public like in the 70s or something. Uh-huh. Is that when it premiered? Like, it was a long time ago. And so it was wild to have him there. And I had this idea that having the writer in the room, obviously Lynn Nottage was there as well when we were doing Sweat, that it would be a rigid thing, that they would be sort of, I don't know, like the boss or the teacher or something.
Right.
That
no one's
done it. But it was never like that. It was. It always felt collaborative. And maybe it's just that most really great writers really value what an actor can bring. And their Wally would be tickled pink, like watching the different things that we do that he hadn't thought of. He was always just sitting there laughing his head off, you know? Uh-huh. It's like being a Princess Bride every day. It was great.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot easier and more fun and more collaborative than I had expected it to be. So it's nothing to be afraid of.
That's marvelous to hear, Shalita.
I agree. At Juilliard, we have the playwriting program. Uh-huh. And Chris Durang was the head of the playwriting program. So I did one of his plays, his monologues at school, and we became fast friends. Uh-huh. And so when he asked me to do the reading of the one act of Vanya Sonia, I was familiar enough with his work to know kind of what he wanted, but this was a completely different character. And he just said, I don't know what this is. Figure it out. And I had an hour to do it in front of like 150 people. And this was like his audition to pick which play the McCarter was going to commission to full length. So
what a blessing, though, to have a writer tell you that and then go, there you go, show me something, show me a color.
Yeah. And there was like a lot of trust and mutual respect for my talent and my creativity, which also put a lot of pressure on me because I was like, oh God, I hope this is what you want.
Yeah.
And when we were done, he was like, I don't know what that was, but it worked. It was great. So he wrote the second act with me in mind. And we, you know, he had an idea of the people that he wanted to work on this play. And we figured it out, probably much like your experience as a writer. I just think people want their work to be really, really good. And so I just go in with the best, most positive view of how people are going to work and then let them surprise me.
Yeah.
Let it go down from there.
Yeah, right. Does that resonate with you, Henry? Have you ever had moments where you said, all right, I wrote this. I think I get it, but you do it now to an actor.
Like, totally, yeah, that. Totally. I think that you've got it. Yeah, yeah, totally. And I think it's all about, you know, when you're workshopping something, it's all about, you know, all ideas from all quarters are totally valid. And
yeah.
I think it's, writing is not an exact science. I think, you know, it's not, I don't think it's possible to sit down necessarily at a table and perfectly structure something and that will then work in a room, because you're not, you know, you're writing something, if it's a script, it's to be performed. So you need to see that, and that's part of the process.
Yeah.
What people bring is always great and amazing. We've just done a workshop for this new TV thing we're working on. We've just done 3 weeks of a day in the room, and then a day writing, and then a day in the room, and a day writing. And it's amazing. And you have these great days where you just suddenly, like huge things click about what it is. And, you know, the whole personality of the piece is like, oh, that's where it is, you know.
It makes
things
itself
that you've
known.
Written, whether you've already overwritten, there's just way too much of it. And actually, it's just super clear just from a look. Or, you know, things that actually, we need to explore a bit more of this, or we need, you know, this way of doing this particular joke isn't funny because it doesn't work with the intention. So all of that stuff just comes out from the room. And it's so important to have people collaborating on it and working on it.
Collaboration, I think that's the kind of the key word, and I love that. I think that's what probably performers and actors really dig too, is getting in the minds of other people who are all working towards a common goal. So now, my friends, we're going to have the opportunity to talk to somebody out there in the theater world. Whoa. More specifically, we're going to go to San Diego. Hey, is this Fran?
Yeah, this is.
Hi, Fran. This is Ben, and you are on Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast.
Hey.
Hi.
Isn't that fun?
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're here with Allison Wright, Henry Lewis, and Shalita Grant are on our panel today, all fantastic Broadway stars and television stars and writers and actors. We'd like to talk to you about what you've got going on in San Diego, California right now.
Well, thank you very much. I'm involved in a production of a play called The Explorers Club. And if nobody knows anything about it, it's basically a men's explorers club that is in that Victorian era, right before the turn of the last century, or I should say the century before, that is exclusively men's only until it is beset with a new potential female member, poisonous snakes, rapidly growing fauna, the British military, and upset Irishmen. Hilarity ensues. And it's being done at Lambs Players in Coronado, California.
The Lambs Players in Coronado, California.
And what's really great about them is that they have always been loyal to San Diego-based artists, and they are employing so many local artists that it is it's a magnet for us to want to work there.
I love that. I love that. I think it's important for actors who may be listening. Everybody should know that there's work being done everywhere, mm-hmm. and that there are
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm glad that you're doing that, Fran. Tell us dates that it's running so everybody can run out and see it and buy a ticket and travel across the country.
Oh yeah, run out real quick. It opens up August 11th. I think that's the first preview, and then it runs through September 24th, and it performs Tuesdays through Sunday.
That's a nice healthy run.
Good run.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I didn't even realize that August 11th. That's coming up real soon. Yes. I got to get off book.
Yeah, I mean, by the time this is heard, that may even be in the past, Fran. That may have already happened. So welcome to
the future.
Yeah. Hey, Fran, you've got this incredible panel here, is there anything that you might want to pick their brains about or ask a question about their experience?
The thing that it blows my mind is the, first of all, I was just doing a little bit of research last night, and I was absolutely blown away. I have watched every single one of you in one way, shape, or form, and I feel overwhelmed with nervousness. So thank you very much for including me in this. I guess the thing is, you know, starting with the play that goes wrong, one of the things that always escapes, I think, audience members, it escapes me every time I see a play, and I think that's the beauty of seeing a well-executed live performance, is you forget the technical precision. Like any type of farce or comedy is somewhat like a exquisite math problem, is as much as it needs to be free and improvisational, things also need to happen on cue. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering in the variety of work that you've done, but how that annoys, concerns, frustrates, or is it something where you have gotten in? I saw in one article where you said that you got into a rhythm with things with your other writers and the other members of your different ensembles. But how that plays out for you? Is every play like a new engine? How do you avoid the formulaic nature of doing anything in life?
Good question. Well, I mean,
well done, Fran.
I think that
10 points for Gryffindor.
I think when you approach each new thing, you have to make sure that each project has its own, obviously its own sort of heart and soul, but its own personality as well. And I think that's quite often where the sort of the rhythms come from. We've done various different shows. We've done sort of comedies with fourth walls and comedies where you play that the audience is really there. That has a big impact on the feel of it and the sort of language of the comedy, whether you sort of play directly off the audience or whether you play that they're not there. I think you're right in saying that precision is very important. And I think a big part of what we've tried to learn over the last few years together is about finding how to keep that precision, but at the same time, how to be live in the moment and rediscover it. And I think that it is a difficult thing. I think there's no, it's just about sort of, I suppose it's as a group collectively kind of developing our judgment, I suppose. But no, but I think you're absolutely right. And I think there's quite often when we do a show, there's a frustrating point in the process that I think probably happens for everybody when you get to a point where you sort of know what it needs to be, but as a company, we're not quite, no one can retain all of the staff yet. So we sort of know what it is, but we're still sort of, we're unable to kind of do it. And so, but obviously that's just drilling and just time and, you know, literally putting the hours and bits of fiddly business and stuff that you've just got to go over and go over.
I was going to say, the other thing that's difficult about for me in asking any of you, the three of you questions, and Ben, I want to include you in that, is that, isn't it the worst thing when this, oh God, please edit me. I sometimes I say things and I immediately begin to regret. I have a heady editor in my
me
head.
Me too. So,
yeah, working way overtime right now. But the thing is, it's like when people ask you to talk about your process, it's the worst thing. Like right now, people are coming up to me, friends in San Diego, you know, come up and they're like, oh, the Explorers Club, what's it about? I'm like, I don't know. Just please come. You know, I mean, I could tell you the plot, or I could tell you this, that, and the other thing. But it's like talking about process is so weird, because even though there are all these wonderful schools and wonderful teachers and wonderful theories, in the end, there is this ethereal, you can't touch it, grasp it thing, which is, it's either there or it's not. It's like a relationship. It's like, you know, this isn't going to work out, so we should call it quits on the first date. You know, 5 minutes, we'll both have a drink, and then let's get the hell out of here. But then there are those things where it's just, there's this thing that works. If you start to talk about it, you kind of start to kill it, which is...
Totally. Someone told me the other day a Ronald Reagan quote, which is that if you're explaining, you're losing. I think that's very true.
Yeah.
You know, and I find that totally as a writer all the time. People want to know what it is, what it's about, or how it's to distill it. And it's very difficult to do that.
There's more of an alchemy to it than something innate. I like that very much. Fran, thank you so much. We're going to say goodbye to you. People out there listening, go see the Explorers Club at the Lambs Players in Coronado, California. Is that what you said?
That's exactly it.
Thank you so much, Fran.
Thanks, Fran.
Thank you very much. And thank you guys so much.
We love you, Fran.
Right, oh, you're great.
All right, friends. I know you love Broadway, and I can only imagine that if you're anything like me, you love a good vacation. So why not combine the two and take a Broadway-themed vacation with Playbill? Playbill Travel has been hosting the biggest fans of Broadway all over the world on incredible week-long cruises that get you up close and personal with the biggest stars of Broadway. I'm not joking. One night you can hear an amazing and intimate performance by, I don't know, let's say Tony Award winner and gorgeous human being Christine Ebersole. And the next morning you'll be going on an incredible excursion through Iceland with her. If you don't believe me, check out PlayBillTravel.com to take a look at Playbill's latest cruise up the Rhone River in France, where guests and Broadway stars had the time of their lives. Playbill Travel has three amazing cruises lined up between now and July of next year, so head to PlayBillTravel.com to book your soon-to-be most favorite vacation ever. All right, we're going to have to wrap up. Thank you guys so much for being here. I'm going to ask you each one more question, and it's going to be a compound question. Starting with you, Allison, what is your dream role to play, either on film or stage? And also, what, simply put, is the best thing about being an actor?
I think my dream role might be Martha in Virginia Woolf. And the best thing about being an actor, God, why is that such a hard question? That
shouldn't be so hard, Fran was just kind of saying that. It's kind of like asking,
help me, Fran, call back.
How do you do it? I just do.
I don't know. Maybe it's just like the luxury of actually getting to do it. You know, I never assumed like for a long time that I would actually get to do it, that I would actually get to make my living doing this and be able to stop having a second job and have the luxury of being able to devote all of my time to it and all of my time to more learning and more understanding of the craft. Like, it's a luxury just to get to do it.
Henry.
Dream role is a hard one. There's lots of different things. But I think I'd quite like to play one day Richard III. That would be quite fun, I think.
Delish.
And then I think about acting, I don't know. I think just in a very, very basic way, I think that it's just a really, really creative thing to do. And I think that if you enjoy creative things, it's one of the best ones.
Yeah. Shalita Grant.
The best thing about being an actor is collaboration. I really love working with people and like seeing their ideas. Dream role. I agree with you, Henry.
Right? Richard III, yeah?
No.
Richard III.
No, but it is like
Shalita Grant
so many,
is Richard
so
III.
Many roles to play. But the first one that popped in my head is Othello. I'd love to play Othello.
That makes me tingle.
Yeah,
parts of my body
right?
just did this. Yeah.
Okay, and very quickly, tell us what's up next so people can make sure to follow you and stalk you and pay to see everything that you're doing moving forward.
Well, luckily, you don't have to pay for anything that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare in the Park is free.
That's right.
And we're there till the 13th. Mm-hmm. And then NCIS New Orleans is on CBS. So as long as you got an antenna, you can watch it.
I love it. And you've got a television thing in the work, Henry. We do.
I can't say very much about it yet because it hasn't been announced, but we're working on something else with BBC back in the UK when we get back. And Play That Goes Wrong is running on into 2018 on Broadway.
Awesome. Alison, right.
I am shooting the second season of Sneaky Pete on Amazon right now. And then in a couple of weeks, I am going to do the pilot of Snowpiercer, which is going to kick butt.
Snowpiercer? What's Snowpiercer?
Yeah, it's the Korean director, let me get it right, Bong Joon-ho, who did Okja, which is out right now. He also did The Host, which was an incredible film. He did the film a couple of years ago, and they're making it into a TV show. We're going to shoot the pilot for TNT. Jennifer Connelly is the lead. It's going to be dope, y'all.
Dope, y'all. There she goes again. Alison Wright proving once again just how very street she can absolutely be. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us on Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast. I had a wonderful time. I hope that you did. Listeners, I hope that you did. Make sure that you keep up with us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all at the Broadway Cast. Let us know what you're working on in your neck of the woods, and let us know what you'd like to hear from our incredible panelists as we move forward. This is your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, saying thank you so much to our panels, Alison, Henry,
thank
and
you.
Shalita.
Thanks.
And get out there, friends, and have a great show.
Yay!
Tune in next week for episode 10. It is our season 1 finale, and it's big. We have an incredible list of surprise Broadway guests lined up for our panel. Want to take a guess at who that is? I know you do. Tweet us at the Broadway Cast.
Make sure you don't miss a single episode and subscribe to us on iTunes. And now you can listen to Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast on Spotify.
And while you're at it, follow us on all social media platforms at the Broadway Cast.